Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC Studios, I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast. It's Monday, February 26th. I got a promotional mail recently from the conservative Hillsdale College in Hillsdale, Michigan, advertising their school and looking for donations. The very first line of the letter says, "If we're going to save America from the growing threats of socialism, transgenderism, and Marxism, there's only one way we can do it, education." And I thought, okay, fine, a college that offers an education based on political conservatism, they're allowed. We're a politically diverse country. It's a private college. People can get educated in the context that they choose. But then I thought about that opening sentence, and I thought, which one of these does not belong? Which one of the three things that they claim they're trying to save America from? Socialism, Marxism, and transgenderism. Now, socialism and Marxism, you can believe in them or not. Okay, fine. But transgenderism? How you experience your own body as an ism? A belief system? A political philosophy? That's just hate speech, to my eye. It's like saying we should save the country from left-handedism or blue-eye-ism. The trans people I know didn't choose what gender they experienced themselves to be by weighing competing isms like some audience member in a political debate. So here's a college that's fundraising off the idea that one of the three big threats to the country is a belief system that isn't a belief system. Maybe they should be saying our college helps make America safe for otherism, labeling people who are different from the majority or different from you as threats to the social order. I had a similar thought when I saw the news last week that the Nassau County executive on Long Island, Bruce Blakeman, banned transgender girls and women from playing in school sports on any Nassau County athletic facilities. That's around 100 ball fields, ice rinks, and other facilities. Blakeman said, quote, "There's too much bullying going on of biological males trying to inject themselves in female sports. It's wrong and it's a form of bullying," unquote. Now, maybe there's a question of how to deal with trans women athletes because people born as boys are bigger on average. There are men's and women's divisions of major sports because of that. And maybe that's a conversation among people of goodwill. But to call it bullying is just hate speech, to my eye. A transgender woman or girl is just a transgender woman or girl who wants to play ball. Someone who experiences their own body as they experience it. They're not boys pretending to be girls so they can bully girls by playing field hockey or softball or running in a track meet. There are much easier ways that boys can bully girls. In fact, county officials in Nassau County then said they don't even know of any examples, not one, of a transgender girl on a Nassau County team. And yet, Blakeman said he'd been thinking about issuing the ban for months. The county has lots of actual problems he can deal with, but he chose a non-problem to make a big announcement about. Now, I have a theory. It's about helping Republican candidates win elections in contested Long Island districts this year, because this kind of hate speech actually sells right now to a certain percent of the population that's meaningful. That's just a theory. So Hillsdale College is saving America from an ism that isn't an ism, and the Nassau County executive is saving Long Island from an epidemic of bullying that they can't even cite one example of because transgender human beings have become political and religious targets of 2024 American politics. Hate speech, othering some of our neighbors, putting targets on their backs, masquerading as saving society from things that don't even exist. Well, who is being bullied are trans kids, some of them to death. A case in Oklahoma shines a light on this matter. 16-year-old Nex Benedict, who identified as non-binary, died after being beaten up by three older female students in a girls' bathroom in Owosso High School in Oklahoma. Activists are pointing to Oklahoma's SB 615, which prevents trans students from using bathrooms that align with their gender identity, is one culprit in the case. Another being far-right activist Shaya Raichik, who's more known for running the account Libs of TikTok on X, which has amassed 2.9 million followers by ridiculing visible or outspoken LGBTQ people, putting a target on their backs. Let's talk about this with Alejandra Caraballo, clinical instructor at Harvard Law School's Cyber Law Clinic. Alejandra, thanks for coming on. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks for having me.
Is transgenderism a thing?
No, it's absolutely not a thing. It's a term that's used to dehumanize trans people and reduce our existence to an ideology.
Do boys, people born boys who become trans girls or women, do they join sports teams so they can bully the other team's girls?
Absolutely not. They're just playing for the same reasons anyone else is playing, for an opportunity, a chance to compete, an opportunity just to experience being on a team with other people and playing with their classmates. This particular executive order in Nassau County is so incredibly broad that it would apply to a girls' chess team that was using a Nassau County facility. And that's exactly the kinds of things we've seen. I think a lot of people tend to focus on kind of more physical sports, such as basketball or softball or things like that, or swimming. But in reality, this can be incredibly broad. We've seen attempts to ban trans women from fishing, from pool, or billiards, as it's also called. And so what this really is it's not really about fairness in sports at all. It's really about excluding and otherizing trans people in general.
For you at Harvard Law School, can you give us a legal analysis of what this county, it's an executive order, what this executive order would actually permit or not?
Yeah, I mean, it's incredibly broad. It explicitly only applies to trans girls playing in sports, but since it applies to any county facility for any team that holds itself out as being for girls, like I said, it can apply to a team of five-year-olds playing, t-ball at any county facility. So it doesn't take into account anything beyond just gender identity, which would violate the Gender Expression Non-Discrimination Act, which was passed in 2019 and signed into law. Additionally, it violates the human rights law. It violates the Equal Protection Clause of the U.S. Constitution. And as you've mentioned, there's potential considerations like, things like needing a doctor's note or other things that we could implement as reasonable limitations. But this is not that. This is just a flat out ban. And if, a trans girl who has never gone through a male puberty and has transitioned, has been, living her life as trans since she was 4 or 5 years old, if she's 13 and wanting to compete on the swim team, they're saying, oh, well, she can compete on the boys team, but that's going to out her. That's going to cause humiliation. And instead of, and on top of that, because they've never gone through any male puberty, they have none of the advantages that, that people will say they would have. And so really, this is about just otherizing trans people and putting them out there to bully them and to really bring harm and concentrate it for political points.
And you're a law professor, you're not a sports coach or sports writer, but is there somewhere in there a legitimate question of how to deal with trans women athletes? That's, a subtler conversation that's worth having, because people born as boys are bigger on average. I read the average height of an NBA player is 6'6", a WNBA player 6'1". No woman has ever beat the first place man in the New York Marathon. You could go on. Is there some conversation that doesn't include all this hate that's real there?
Absolutely. There's always room for reasonable conversation. And these had been going on for years before kind of this moral panic around trans people really became kind of mainstream over the last few years. For well over two decades, you know, the Olympics had allowed trans women to compete if they suppressed their hormones for 1 to 2 years and took feminizing hormones such as estrogen. And so there was constantly a look at the science at how much, you know, if they suppress testosterone or have had gender affirming surgery and they're on feminizing hormones for 2 or 3 years, like how that, you know, affects their performance. And there's ways to look at it, and especially sport by sport, because certain sports, it may be more apparent than others. And then there's also the question of trans youth who've never gone through a male puberty, either because they went on puberty blockers and then went on feminizing hormones. And so they don't have those advantages because it's really hormones that really dictate a lot of the differences between girls and boys. And so it's a very nuanced conversation, and one that we can have, particularly about specific sports and leaving sports particularly. But you know, you can have that conversation about balancing fairness with participation without creating these kinds of blanket bans that ostracize and push out trans girls entirely from participating in any sports at all.
You know, I was going to ask you next about Next Benedict, the 16-year-old non-binary student in Oklahoma who I mentioned in the intro, who died the morning after being beaten up by three girls in a high school bathroom earlier this month. But we have several callers who want to bring up a tragic situation much closer to home here in New York. And I'm going to take Jessamine in Brooklyn right now. Jessamine, you're on WNYC. Thank you for calling in.
Thank you, Brian. Yes, I was calling because I am a member of the Panel for Educational Policy and a parent of two trans students myself in the New York City public schools. And 2 days before spring break, or the February break was set to begin, we learned of the horrific death by suicide of a trans student at my older child's high school, which is located in Community School District 2. And I'm not sure if you're aware, but CEC 2 currently seats two avowed transphobes. And, you know, there has been a lot of public outcry to remove these individuals, but the city has yet done nothing. And, you know, to date, we're sort of in this situation where, you know, we have active transphobes.
Who appoints or elects those people?
Members of the CECs are elected by parents within a given school district. But, you know, if you followed any education reporting from last year, we know that there was historic low turnout in the last CEC election cycle. So, you know, it's sort of widely understood that the CECs that are seated today are not necessarily representative of the constituencies that they represent.
What makes somebody in that context a transphobe, as you label them?
Their public comments denying the reality of transness. Describing it as confusion rather than an essential nature of a person, a lived experience.
Jessamine, thank you for your call. I think we have another Brooklyn parent calling about the same incident. Hi, you're on WNYC.
Hello.
Hi.
Are you?
Yeah, it's
you. Hi, how are you? I will do my best to keep it together like that last parent. I want to, out of respect for privacy, keep my name, you know. But I too, am the father of trans kids. And, you know, this environment, and my kid goes to the school where that tragedy occurred, this is a really loving environment. It's a really wonderful school, and it still happens.
Was there something that was a bullying incident or policy, something at the school level that you think contributed to her decision to die by suicide, to their decision to die by suicide? But we lost that caller. I think he said all he could say without losing it. And, oh, my God, Alejandra.
Yeah. I mean, this is just something that is just like, it is so difficult to hear these stories, because this is, you know, what we know is happening across the United States. And I think it's a particularly telling, you know, the first parent who brought up the CEC and it coming from the top, it's adults that are failing these kids. It's particularly adults in positions of power who are deciding to utilize hatred against trans people in order to score political points. And the kids that are suffering are the trans youth themselves, who oftentimes don't have the kinds of support that we would want every child to have. And it's just so incredibly difficult to hear stories like that. And I've heard similar of others in other states, such as Montana, during legislative sessions, like even talking about these kinds of policies and enacting these kinds of policies can exact tremendous psychological harm. But I also just want to say, to any of the trans youth listening out there, like, there are so many people fighting for you and trying to make the world a better, kinder place. And don't lose hope. And there's plenty of resources, such as the Trevor Project, that you can reach out to if you're feeling like you are having a really hard time. I hope we can give out maybe the number for the Trevor Project or similar resources, because it's just it's an incredibly difficult time, and we need to be able to support, all the vulnerable children who are just going through it right now.
One more call, and then we're out of time. Allegra in Westchester, you're on WNYC. Hello, Allegra.
Hi, can you hear me?
Uh-huh, we gotcha.
Hi, so I'm a relatively young adult, a relatively young queer adult, and the point that I just wanted to make about this is, I think there's so much focus in the language regarding this topic about, like, the perceived differences in levels of competitive abilities between people who are, the quote-unquote assigned female at birth versus assigned male at birth. And that language almost always is centered around, like, professional athletes and athletic endeavors at the professional level. And I think it's just important to realize that so many people who partake in athletic endeavors, like, in this country, probably 99% of them will never reach a professional level. And for a lot of kids playing on sports teams, the competitive outcome is not necessarily the point. The point is so much more centered around, like, teamwork and communication and friendship and just, like, building sense of community. And I'm sorry, I'm getting very emotional.
That's all right. Take your time.
But, like, as a non-binary person who grew up playing competitive sports, I know how important having those avenues of connection were to me. And I made, lifelong friends. And I think I, accumulated a number of skills that I'll keep with me for the remainder of my life. And I just wanted to make that point as well, that this is just, like, an avenue of social connection that we are ridding people, many of whom are already feeling lonely and isolated and out of place socially, young adults, due to the nature of their identities and the discrimination that they face. And I guess I just wanted to emphasize that, is that I think, this was such an important avenue and vehicle for social connection for me growing up. And it just, like, devastates me from this perspective also, that that is not something that's being made available to, a
everybody.
Number of kids,
yeah.
Also young adults, around the country today.
Allegra, thank you very much. Thank you very, very much. And I don't think we can top that. So I think we're going to have to end it here, which we have to anyway, more or less, because of the clock. I'll just read one more text message about the Nassau County executive banning trans girls from playing on Nassau County sports facilities. Listener writes, this issue makes my blood boil. I am a parent of a trans woman, and I know of no person who has transitioned because they want to compete in sports. This is the most ridiculous, false narrative. And his calling it bullying, and this will be the last word, then I'll give out that contact information for the Trevor Project, Alejandra. That's the part that's so over the top that I wonder if it's even a winning issue or one that's going to backfire on him in Nassau County politics, saying that they're joining sports teams as trans girls to bully people.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is that we have examples around the country where people have run explicitly on this kind of anti-trans platform, and it's a losing one. The governor of Kentucky just won re-election despite vetoing all of these kinds of bans on trans youth and standing up for trans youth. State Senate seats across the country in 2022. There was the governor's race in Michigan and Arizona, where both of the governors there were attacked for supporting trans youth, and the candidates bringing those attacks lost. And so while this may be very good for motivating, I think, kind of the more extreme conservative base, it doesn't move the middle. It doesn't really change any votes. And so this is not an election winner. It may bring attention. It may get, you know, headlines, but it doesn't win elections. And I think this is one of those things that may backfire spectacularly here in Nassau County.
So, folks, if you're looking for support as a trans or non-binary person, you can go to thetrevorproject.org, thetrevorproject.org, or call 866-488-7386, 866-488-7386. And we thank Alejandra Caballero from the Harvard Law School's Cyber Law Clinic for being our guest. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Brian Lehrer, a Daily Politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.